Chapter 14. Sing. There have been significant changes to the internal structure of the station, Colonel Tanaka said. Not that surprising. This was all supposed to be a generation ship that spun at a full G for a few centuries. Now it's a way station at a third. A lot of the infrastructure would want rethinking, and there's never been a belter ship that didn't get modified to suit the moment. If they hadn't purged their security and maintenance databases, we'd know a great deal more. But there's nothing lost here that we can't build back, given time. I see, Singh said, considering the possible methods of recapturing the lost data. In addition, we've recovered 1,264 firearms in our sweeps, the vast majority of which were handguns, she said, scrolling through the list on her monitor. Areas with complex compounds that can easily be used in bomb-making are under strict security watches. But we'll need to make some extensive redistribution and security changes before everything can be effectively locked down. Anything else? Singh asked. They still have kitchen knives and power tools, and anything we missed. Tanaka was out of her power armor, and her long, lean form was insolently stretched out across a chair in Singh's office. She was older than him by almost 2 decades, and he could see her reaction to his relative youth and the way she held her shoulders and the shape of her smile. She play-acted respect for him. The office, his office, was small enough to be functional. A desk, chairs, a small decorative counter with its own bar. The workspace of an important administrator. He'd taken over a complex that had once been accounting space, based on the names and titles they hadn't scraped off the doors yet. The ops and command decks, like engineering and the docks, were in the part of the station that was permanently on the float, and he found the idea of working in Null G uncomfortable. And more than that, he'd seen from Duarte and from Trejo what a real commander's space looked like, and it looked humble. He went back to the issue that bothered him most. 1,200 guns? There were less than 100 security personnel on the whole station. Belters have a long tradition of not trusting governmental authorities to protect them, Tanaka replied with a shrug. Nearly all of these weapons were in civilian hands. But the Belters are the government here. They're Belters, she said, as if her experiences before Laconia explained everything that was happening now. They resist centralized authority. It's what they do. She gave the report one last glance, then slapped the monitor against her arm where it curled up into a thick bracelet. I have meetings today with their centralized authority, so that should be illuminating, Singh said, surprised at the contempt in his voice. Tanaka gave him a little half-smile. How old were you during the Io campaign? She asked. It felt like a bit of a dig. He remembered the Io campaign the way most children in his generation did. The news feeds announcing the launches toward Mars. The gut-clenching fear that one of the missiles bearing the alien hybrids would make it as far as the Martian surface. Even after the crisis had passed, the weeks of nightmares. He'd been a child then, and the memory had the near mythical feel of a story retold until it barely resembled its truth. Those terrible days that had convinced his parents that something more would have to be done to protect humanity from itself and its new discoveries, it had planted the seeds that bloomed under the skies of Laconia. But bringing up his age now felt like a power play, a way to point out how little experience he had. He tried not to show that it got under his skin. Not old enough to think of it as the Io campaign, though of course I'm thoroughly versed on the history. I was a JG when that shitstorm went down, Tanaka said. We were actively fighting with Belter factions back then. You probably think these people are a half step up from spear-carrying savages. I don't. And you'd be right, she continued. They can be the most stupidly stubborn people you'll ever meet. But they're tough as nails, and resourceful. I think you misunderstood me, Singh said, fighting to keep a flush out of his cheeks. I'm sure, Tanaka said, then stood up. I have an interview with the technical assessment crew. I'll report in when I'm done with them. In the meantime, don't leave this office without your monitor on. Security directive. Of course, Singh said. The flush of shame he'd felt, shifting over into anger. Personnel security fell under Tanaka's operational command while they were occupying the station. It was one of the few areas where Singh could not countermand her orders, so after dressing him down and questioning his understanding of their situation, she was now delivering a direct order. The humiliation stung. Appreciated, she said, and headed for the door. Colonel, Singh said at her back. He waited until she'd turned to look back at him. I am the provisional governor of this station, by direct order from High Consul Duarte himself. When you're in this office, you will stand at attention until I offer you a seat, and you will salute me as your superior. Is that understood? Tanaka cocked her head to the side and gave him another of her enigmatic little half-smiles. It occurred to Singh that Aliana Tanaka had risen to the rank of colonel in the most punishingly trained combat unit humanity had ever known, and that he was alone in his office with her. He wanted to look down at her legs, see if she was rolling up onto the balls of her feet or shifting her stance. Instead, he stared her in the eye and clamped his stomach down into a knot. If he was supposed to be kind and humble, to ask about her family and trade familiarities with her, he was doing a poor job of it. Sir, Tanaka said, coming to attention with a sharp salute. Yes, sir. Dismissed, Singh said, then sat down and looked at his monitor as though she'd already disappeared. A moment later, his door opened and then closed. Only then did he collapse back into his chair and wipe the sweat off his face. Give me one reason we don't tell you to go fuck yourselves, the head of Medina Station's Air, Water, and Power Authority said. The AWP works for us now, Singh replied, keeping his voice level. Like hell we do. It's shock, Singh told himself. It's surprise and confusion and sorrow that the universe doesn't behave the way they thought it did. And everyone on Medina Station, maybe everyone on the colonies and in Sol System 2, was going to be struggling with it. All he could do for them was keep telling the truth as clearly and as simply as he could and hope it sank in. You do, Singh continued. And if you do not order your workers to resume their duties, I will have technicians from the Gathering Storm take over for them, and then I will have every single member of your organization arrested. You can't do that, the AWP chief said with bravado, but he rubbed his bald head and his expression wasn't as certain. I can, Singh said. Everyone on your staff is back at work by next shift rotation or I start issuing arrest orders. You won't. Dismissed, Singh said, then gestured at one of his marine guards who ushered the AWP chief out of the room. Putting Medina Station in order was messy. He had imagined, coming out, that as governor of the station he would be kept apart from the normal rank-and-file citizens and laborers, that he would have a status that kept those around him a little more in awe, with underlings to deal directly with the hands-on administration. In practice, Admiral Trejo had the role of power, and he was the underling. He accepted it with good grace. It would all be more pleasant in a few months, when the new defense emplacements were complete and the Tempest could progress to the next phase of their mission. The briefings he'd had on the way out, all information gleaned from passively monitoring the backsplash radio that leaked through Laconia's ring gate, were accurate, but wildly incomplete. It left him feeling a half-step behind himself all the time. It wasn't even the basic structures. Those were constrained by the biological and energetic needs of the ships and station, and so were, in a sense, predictable. It was the cultural forms and expectations. The absurdities and accidents of human character that affected the flow of goods and information in ways that were as unpredictable as they were exhausting. Like having to throw an entire branch of Medina's infrastructure staff in the brig. "Who's next?" Singh asked his aide, a junior lieutenant named Kasich he'd grabbed from the admin pool on the storm. Kasich scrolled through a list on his monitor. "You have Carrie Fisk next," Kasich said. "The president of the Association of Worlds," Singh said with a laugh. "Bring her in." Carrie Fisk entered his office, her frown lines and fidgety hands telling Singh she'd be trying to hide her fear with anger. She was a short, thin woman, with a severe face and beautiful black hair piled up on her head. Her clothes were expensive. Someone from one of the richer colonies, then. He knew her from the news feeds they'd captured. She looked thinner and less pleasant in person. Singh gestured at the chair across from his desk and said, "Please sit, Madam President." She sat, the anger dissipating at his politeness. "Thank you." "Madam President, I have news," Singh said, flicking a document from his monitor at her. The hand terminal in her pocket chimed. "And it will be good news or bad news, depending on how seriously you take your job and how much you like doing actual work. You may read that later to get all the details." She'd started to take the terminal out of her pocket, but slid it back at his words. "I take my job very seriously." "Excellent, because it seems you used to have a title that held no actual power, except that you presided over the Association of Worlds and their meetings here, which is a body that negotiates interplanetary laws it has absolutely no ability to enforce. Earth and Mars haven't formally joined your coalition, and the Transport Union has been in a position to dictate terms in all your agreements, or so I'm led to understand. My access to the news feeds has been limited." He tried for a self-deprecating smile, and thought he probably got about three-quarters of the way there. "It's a start," Fisk said, the frown returning to her face. "At least we have people here talking out their problems rather than immediately reaching for a gun."
"I agree," Singh said.
"And more importantly, so does High Consul Duarte.
The document I just sent you empowers the Association of Worlds to make laws that will have binding authority on the member systems, which now includes every human colony.
You, as president of that body, will be granted a variety of legislative powers to aid in that cause." "And who is granting us this new power?" Fisk asked. Her face had twisted up, like he'd asked her to eat something distasteful. She knew the answer to his question, but she wanted him to say it so that she could begin her counter-argument. A counter-argument Singh had no interest in entertaining. "High Consul Winston Duarte, who is now the supreme executive authority of the Association of Worlds and all subsidiary governments. All edicts passed by this body that are not vetoed by the executive power will have the force of law, backed by the military power of Laconia." "I don't know if..." "Madam President," Singh said, leaning forward and waiting until her attention was fully on him before he continued, "I advise you to take this very seriously. The High Council wants a fully functioning legislature and bureaucracy, and believes that the existing one, with some modification of course, fits the bill. I strongly advise that you not give him a reason to think it's better to tear this down and build something new in its place. Do we understand each other?" Fisk nodded. Her hands were fidgeting in her lap again.
Excellent, Singh said. He stood up and extended his hand. Fisk stood and took it. I look forward to working with you as High Consul Duarte's representative. We have much to do, but I believe it will be exciting and rewarding work. Singh released her hand and gave a small bow. What comes next? Fisk asked. I would recommend you begin by familiarizing yourself with the document I sent you. It contains all the provisional rules for the association legislature until such time as more permanent protocols can be voted into place. Okay, Fisk said. I know you will be quite busy, Singh told her, gently guiding her past his marine guards and over to the door. But I look forward to our next meeting. Once she'd left, he let out a long sigh and leaned against the wall. One more, Lieutenant, then we can break for lunch, he said. Yes, sir, Kasich said. Next is Onni Langstiever, head of station security for Medina. Singh smiled a little, thinking how Tanaka would have reacted to hearing that title. Former head of security, he said as he returned to his desk. Give me a moment. Let him wait. Yes, sir, Kasich said. Can I get you anything in the meantime? Water? Coffee? The water here tastes like old piss, and the coffee tastes like old piss run through a gym sock, Singh said. The recycling systems on this station are decades out of date and badly maintained. Yes, sir, Kasich replied. I can have water brought from the storm for you. Or, Singh said, turning to his aide, we can go about actually fixing the problems here. Yes, sir, Kasich said, bobbing his head. If Singh hadn't been tired already and irritable, he would have let it sit there. But the constant pushing back from his own people and the natives of Medina had scratched him enough to raise welts, and he couldn't quite rein himself in. If the posting here becomes permanent, he said, and there is no reason to think it won't, I will be bringing my family to this station. I won't have my daughter drinking badly recycled water, breathing badly filtered air, and attending badly run schools. Kasich had found a bottle of water from somewhere and was pouring it into the coffee machine. Yes, sir, he said, like it had become an autonomic reaction. Lieutenant, look at me. Sir, Kasich said, turning around. What we're doing here is important. Not just for Laconia, but for all of humanity. These people, they need us. They even need us to show them that they need us. When you have children, you'll understand why that matters. Until then, you will behave at all times as an example of Laconian character and discipline. If you don't understand why that's critical, you will act as though you understand, or I will place you in charge of personally scrubbing the water recycling system until it produces laboratory-grade potables. Are we clear? If there was a flicker of resentment in the man's eyes, it was a natural reaction to discipline. Crystal, Governor Singh. Excellent. Then send their former head of security in. Onni Langstiever was a lanky, belter type in a sloppy Medina security uniform, with greasy hair and a permanent sneer curling his lip. He looked over Singh's marine guards just inside the door, then gave Singh himself a look of such low cunning that he almost had the man turned back out again. I'm here, Onni said. You want, Bossman? We're going to discuss your change in status on this station, Singh said. Discuss? Bis bien. Let's discuss. Onni shrugged, then walked toward the guest chair. Do not sit, Singh said. Something in his tone brought Onni up short, and the man frowned at him as if really seeing him for the first time. You won't be here long. Onni shrugged again. A short lift of both hands that did not involve the shoulders. The PSYOPs briefing on Belter culture had talked about this. that most of their physical gestures had evolved to use the hands only because they spent so much time in vacuum suits that body language was invisible. It also talked about their cultural conviction that they were the put-upon victims in all interactions with non-belters. Well, if this Oni had come into the room expecting to be victimized, Singh would oblige him. "You are no longer the head of security on Medina Station," Singh said. "Who's the new boss?" Oni replied. He wasn't angry, which was interesting. "It doesn't matter to you," Singh said with a smile, "because you no longer work for station security. In fact, you no longer hold any official duties of any kind on this station. The last official task you will perform is to hand over all personal files related to this station that are not in the official database. Failure to do this will result in arrest and prosecution by a military tribunal of the Laconian Navy."
"Sure, sure, Jefelito.
Only you know most that's gone. Purged," Oni said. "What you have, you will surrender. You're the man now. You may leave."
A smile passed over Oni's face, soft and ingratiating. Singh had seen this before, from the playground to the academy. He'd seen it as a boy in the eyes of the science team that had been on Laconia when Duarte's ships arrived, and on the football team when the woman who'd been their coach was reassigned and a new man stepped in. Respect for power, yes, but also the scent of opportunity. The opportunism of making good with the new powers.
"One thing, Bosmang," Oni said, as Singh had known he would.
"No, not one more."
"No, no, no, wait. You've got to hear this one."
"Fine," Singh said. "Out with it."
"So, that weapon your big ship used? The magnetic one?"
"The Tempest, yes. What about it?"
"Yeah, so,"
Oni said, then paused to scratch his greasy hair and smirk.
"When you hit the hub station with it, where the rail guns were?"
"Yes," Singh said. "We have extensive experience with similar artifacts and judge the risk to be minimal."
"Okay. So when that beam thing hit the hub station, that pinche ball glowed bright yellow for, 15 seconds. Anytime anything hits the ball that dumps any energy into it, you get these little flashes of yellow. This is the first time the whole damn thing lit up. And 15 seconds is a long time."
"I'm having trouble understanding your point," Singh said. "So, during that 15 seconds, all 1,300 rings dumped a massive gamma ray burst into their systems. Hard enough that four ships on approach to the rings had their crews cooked.
Emergency systems kicked in. Autopilot stopped the ships so we don't have four unmanned projectiles flying through the rings at us, but..."
Oni lifted his hands, as if he was presenting a gift. Singh blinked and sat back. Something shifted in his belly. An emotion he hadn't felt since he'd arrived at Medina. Surprise. Maybe even hope. The ring space was, by the best understanding of the science teams, one of the most energetically active things in the perceivable universe. The power required to keep the space itself from collapsing was astounding even to people who routinely built things like Magnetar-class battleships. The effect Langstiever described wouldn't even be a rounding error in the overall system, but the application of it could mean a significant windfall.
"How do you know this?"
The belter spread his hands.
"I live here. I know things not everybody knows."
"Is this correct?" Singh said, not to Oni, but to Kasich.
"I'll have a report prepared immediately," Kasich replied, and left the room already talking at his wrist.
"So yeah,"
Oni continued, laughing a little now, acting as if he'd already ingratiated himself. If he wasn't corrected, it would become true.
"Transport Union's gonna be pissed you just cooked four of their freighter crews."
Singh considered the man. He would need local contacts. natives of Medina Station who were loyal to the new power structure and supporters of Laconian rule. The prospect of having this bootlicker as one of the first among them was beneath his dignity.
"Dismissed," Singh said to the man.
He needed to call Trejo on Tempest and report this.
Oni's face fell.
The smile faded first into surprise and then indignation and resentment. Rejection bloomed into hatred while Singh watched. He'd rarely made a decision proven right so definitively or so quickly. People of this low character would never be part of his administration, and it was telling that Oni had managed to gain power on Medina.
"Bossman, you gotta listen to me," Oni said.
"I said you're dismissed," Singh barked at him, then looked to one of his marine guards.
She immediately grabbed Oni by the arm, halfway lifting him off the ground with her armor's augmented strength.
"Ouch, fuck!"
Oni yelled as she dragged him out of the room.
"Have a cart brought around," Singh said to the remaining marine. "I want to go to the ops center and look over the data about this gamma ray burst."
"Aye, sir," the marine said, then stepped out of the room.
Singh needed to corroborate Oni's story first, then get a full report to Admiral Trejo. If the man was correct, then they had the ability to release a lethal gamma ray burst through the gates whenever they wished. Could there be a more powerful means of controlling travel through the network? It had the potential to shave months off their timetable in establishing control over the various colony worlds. For the first time that day, Singh felt himself relax. He might have just won the Empire for Laconia, all without firing a shot in anger.